Money FM 89.3, best of prime time.
This is prime time on Money FM 89.3. And now it's time for our regular sports show, Game of Two Halves, every Monday at 5:15 p.m., where I host the sports podcasters from the Straits Times. I'm Howie Lim. And with me are assistant sports editor Jonathan Wong and correspondent Sazali Abdul Aziz. Guys, hello.
Hi, Howie. How are you?
Hi, Howie.
Good, thanks for asking. So lots to talk about. Let's start with the English Premier League returning this weekend. Fans around the world no doubt ready for their fix of English football. Liverpool, of course, begin the season as defending champions. But Manchester City, runners-up last term, are expected to put up a better challenge this time round. But easily one of the biggest EPL talking points over the summer break has been Chelsea's transfer activity. The London club have spent about £200 million. That's an eye-watering $360 million Singapore dollars on reinforcements. Which of their signings are you most looking forward to seeing in action? Jonathan, let's start with you.
It probably has to be Kai Havertz, the German international. He reminds me a bit of Frank Lampard, the Chelsea manager. He's a box-to-box midfielder who scores a lot of goals. And I think last year they had Willian and Pulisic getting about 9 goals each in the league. Willian has left for Arsenal, so they sort of do need someone to come in to fill that gap. And Kai has, I think, he reached double digits in terms of goals in his last 2 seasons at Bayern. So I think he's probably going to be a one to watch.
And Sazali?
For me, it's the striker, Timo Werner. I think mainly to see if he will deliver on the hype. Chelsea sorely missed a goal scorer last season, particularly in the second half of the season. So he's seen, you know, by many people as the perfect solution for Chelsea. But whether he can do it remains to be seen. It's not easy for strikers to come into the EPL from a different league and be an instant success. I'm also interested to see whether veteran defender Thiago Silva will be an effective presence in their backline. Again, last year, you know, they lacked a bit of experience at the heart of defense. And certainly a season hit was welcome. But at 35, you know, and having played the last 8 seasons in a far less competitive league in France, I wonder if he'll be able to adapt to the EPL. It reminds me a bit of Manchester United signing Laurent Blanc in 2001. You know, he's obviously also a very decorated player, but he was also 35 then and he turned out to be a huge flop. So, yeah, you know, it's a gamble.
But it looks like Chelsea means business, not to say that you can always just throw money at the problem. Do you see them, though, being able to mount that challenge against Liverpool and Manchester City?
I actually don't. I think it will be too soon for them to suddenly at the level of Liverpool and City, because obviously City and Liverpool have, you know, moved up to a whole different plane in the last couple of seasons. On paper, of course, as you mentioned, their squad depth is incredible, but, you know, football is not played on paper. And I think Frank Lampard will have a tough time to get his team to gel, particularly because of the short preseason this time around. And also, I think he will find it difficult to keep his squad happy. You know, players who got a look in last season, young players like Tomori, Mason Mount, Callum Hudson-Odoi, and Tammy Abraham, you know, they'll all see reduced playing time definitely this season, and he'll have to make sure the morale of the players do not go down. And worst case scenario, he might even lose the dressing room.
What do you reckon, John? Pressure's on Frank, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, like Sarr said, you know, he brought in a lot of young players last season, and that was also because of the transfer ban. And I mean, there was a lot of goodwill, him being an ex-Chelsea player. So there was no pressure on Frank Lampard last season to perform. And he did pretty well in getting to the FA Cup final and getting the Champions League. But I mean, when you spend $200 million, pressure's going to go up on him. And there'll be a huge amount of scrutiny on his tactical abilities this year.
Let's talk about what's been on everyone's lips for a bit. Lionel Messi. A couple of days ago, it looked as though City might be able to complete one of those most shocking transfers of all time by signing Messi from Barcelona. Messi has since made a U-turn, though, on leaving and decided to stay in Spain for at least the next season. What do you make of the whole saga surrounding who's touted to be the world's best player? John?
This is a tricky one. I mean, it's really half-time in terms of this saga. I mean, if you think about it, yes, Messi's going to stay at Barcelona for one more year at the least, but you know, they sort of have won the battle but really lost the war, because they have an unhappy player who's their captain, and it's probably going to be corrosive for the dressing room. And who knows how motivated he will be, and he will probably leave next year on a free transfer. So, you know, they have him now for one season, but you know, there's so many more problems at the club besides just having an unhappy Messi in the dressing room.
It was a bit of an anticlimax, wasn't it? I mean, the news came out of the blue. You know, Messi has requested a transfer. Never in the last 15 years would you have thought he would, you know, be angling for a move away from Barcelona. And then, you know, the idea of him linking up with Pep Guardiola and playing in the EPL at 33 to see him adapt to English football or perhaps English football adapt to Lionel Messi. Mm. It was so fascinating. But as John said, you know, he's not going this year, but it seems it could well happen next year when he runs out his contract. So, yes, the world waits with bated breath to see if Lionel Messi can actually strut his stuff in the EPL next year.
Let's go back to Chelsea, though. They kick off their season with a game away at Brighton. How do you think they'll fare? They have all this transfer news going on. And where else are you keeping your eye on for the first game week of the season, Cezali?
Yeah, I think they'll have it tough. Brighton are not a bad team. They sort of, you know, they're a mid-table team. You know, some people tip them potentially for relegation, but they are a very well-drilled team. And I think, as I mentioned earlier, you know, Chelsea, with all their new additions, they might find it a bit tough to gel so quickly. They might be a bit disjointed. Brighton are well-drilled and they'll find it tough. But I still think Chelsea should have enough quality to script through a win. Elsewhere, I think, you know, Liverpool and Leeds, you know, obviously very interesting to see if Liverpool can hit the ground running. And Leeds, you know, great to see them in the Premier League after so long. And, you know, obviously to see Marcelo Bielsa as the manager, you know, for the first time in English football's top tier. And also Spurs-Everton. Spurs, obviously, with Mourinho and Everton, with, you know, Ancelotti, two huge name managers at the helm of both teams. So there's quite a bit of expected from both of these clubs. So, you know, it would be interesting to see how they start off the season.
Jonathan, what do you reckon?
I'm really looking forward to the Liverpool-Leeds game, I think. Yeah, I'm just really excited to see Bielsa's Leeds and you know, the kind of football they would play. And obviously, it's a tough challenge. They won the championship last year, but, you know, what a start, right, to your first Premier League game in 16 years against Jurgen Klopp's Liverpool. So that should be a cracking game, honestly.
Speaking of crystal balls or cauldrons, if you will, who do you think will be champion and which manager will get the sack first?
Oh, that's a tough one. I mean, obviously, you can't really look past Liverpool and City, but I'm just going to throw a dark horse inside there. And I think Wolves, without any European football, I think they will do pretty well. Mm. I mean, with a longer season, no breaks, I think a team that doesn't have to play in Europe and has just one Premier League game a week, I think Wolves, you know, they have a good squad. It's all kept together. They could spring a challenge.
Cezali?
That's actually really interesting. I didn't really factor that in because, you know, you look at teams that are in Europe, you know, Liverpool, Spurs especially, you know, they have to play some qualifying games for the Europa League and they have a really, really packed schedule. So that could be, you know, a big factor. But, you know, I still think, you know, based on you know, the simple fact of quality, I think it'll still be Liverpool lifting the title. But Manchester City will be closer than they were last season. As I mentioned, Spurs, they are dark horses to me. You know, it's whether Mourinho can drill them into a championship team or, you know, it'll all blow up in his face and you know, he'll probably get the sack before the end of the season. Although the first manager I think will get the sack is David Moyes at West Ham.
They're not doing that bad, are they?
Yeah, but I think they have some, you know, really, really tough fixtures. I don't think David Moyes particularly is a fan favourite. And I think all it takes is a bad run of form. They didn't really particularly do well last year as well, but he kept them up. But I think if they don't, you know, have a few good results, you know, early on this season, you know, we could see him get the boot.
So talking about Spurs, the 8-part documentary series on Amazon, All or Nothing, has gotten some people talking. I mean, have you guys watched it? What did you think? It's no Last Dance by Michael Jordan, but...
Oh, I think you're selling it short, Howie. I mean, it was great. I mean, it's All or Nothing, but it really was the Jose Mourinho show. I mean, Jose is fantastic at it. I mean, I've seen a couple of episodes and he's just box office. He comes in, you know, after Pochettino has been sacked and you can see immediately how quickly he gets the players on his side. I mean, there are great examples of him, you know, taking people like Dele Alli aside or Harry Kane and just, you know, getting them all fired up and he looks like the kind of guy that, you know, you will run through a wall for. And it's just a great insight into the kind of person that Mourinho is and you know, they talk a lot about his tactical nuance. But, you know, really, look at this. It's how he gets the players to fight for him so much. It's amazing. I love it.
No doubt. I think, you know, Mourinho is the star of, you know, this All or Nothing series. I think, as you mentioned, you know, sports documentaries are all the rage now given the success of The Last Dance. And basically, it's sort of the same formula with the football ones. We've seen it before with Man City, Sunderland, Leeds, and now Spurs. Mm. You know, there's unprecedented insight and access into what goes on at clubs and a peek at the personalities, the players and the managers. And, you know, like John said, you know, him having conversations with Harry Kane and Dele Alli, you know, telling Dele Alli to his face, you know, you got potential, you know, but you're lazy. You know, I was 20 years old and now I'm 56, you know. So stuff like that, you know, the way he sort of gets into his players' heads, I think that's so fascinating.
We saw a couple of unexpected incidents happen in some high-profile sports events over the weekend. In the Italian Grand Prix, Lewis Hamilton finished 7th despite starting on pole, with Pierre Gasly winning the first race of his career. John, you're Straits Times resident Formula One nut. Just how big a surprise was this turn of events in Monza?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was a huge surprise, but I think it was a great race for F1. I mean, it was a breath of fresh air.
So another big shock over the weekend was Novak Djokovic's disqualification at the US Open for striking a ball at a line judge. What happened there and what does this mean for him? John?
I think we all woke up and saw this shocking news. I mean, I think Djokovic was up in the first set and then he was down and I think he just lost his temper and when he just accidentally hit the ball backwards, you know, in frustration and it hit the lineswoman in her throat. And because of the rules of the Grand Slam in terms of physical abuse, he was disqualified. And it's a huge shock. I mean, it was his slam to lose, you know, without Roger and Rafa there, you know, everyone expected Djokovic to win this tournament and get his 18th Grand Slam, which would be just two behind Federer's record. So, you know, it was a huge shock.
Yeah, for me, you know, I as John mentioned, you know, woke up this morning, you know, went on Twitter and I saw the clip. At first, I laughed because, you know, I didn't know how serious it was. And then, you know, I found out he got disqualified and I learned that, you know, the line judge was struck in the throat, which seemed pretty serious. So, but at the same time, I do feel for him. I think he should, you know, be given a break. You know, I know he's done his reputation no favors, you know, holding that exhibition tournament, which became a COVID hotspot almost. But, you know, this time I actually do feel for him. It was inadvertent. Probably he shouldn't have done it, but, you know, obviously he wasn't aiming for the line judge's throat. I felt the line judge was a bit too dramatic for my liking. So,
she's,
you know,
all right, by like, the way.
Yeah, she is. I know Novak has since apologized on his Instagram, but I still think, you know, he's been a bit too harshly treated or condemned in this case.
There goes the final whistle for our sports discussion of the week. We hope you enjoyed listening to us. Glad to have you both in the studio, Jonathan and Cezali. Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg. or download the SBH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.